Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Wednesday, August the 2nd, 2023, 17, coming up on 18 minutes past the hour. And we have got 3 hours ahead of you. You are not going to want to miss. Now, I'm not going to tell our guest what today is, but between you and me, the audience out there, today is very historic here in Marion because it is the centennial of the death of President Warren G. Harding. Warren G. Harding died in office in San Francisco on August the 2nd, 1923, 100 years ago today. And it's historic for a lot of reasons. Number one, because it was the end of the Harding presidency. It was the death of the man, President Warren G. Harding. And for the last 100 years, there has been a lot of speculation about what happened on this day. As you heard last hour, his grandson feels that he was murdered. A lot of other people have always felt that as well. So, up, down, left, right, or sideways, it's an historic day here in Marion. Now, again, we've had earplugs in our guest ears as we mentioned that fact, because our guest today for the remaining 3 hours, well, who else would you have but President Warren G. Harding? President Harding, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm tired because I'm just coming off of a 22-day tour of the continental United States and Alaska. Plenty to tell you about that. That's been an amazing journey. But I'm tired and I'm having to pace myself. I need a little assistance getting up and down, and but I'm here.
I'm glad that you're here. President Harding, if you turn that mic a little more closer to you there so we can hear everything you say. Here we are in the summer of 1923. What's going on?
Well, it's been a fascinating summer. I did the Voyage of Understanding, which was the 22-day tour that led me to where I am today in San Francisco. I can tell you that this voyage is something I've been wanting to do for a long time. We originally planned it for 1922, and unfortunately, Florence took very ill. Barely survived her kidney problems. Kidney problems plagued Florence most of her adult life. She had what's called a floating kidney. Basically, anatomically, the kidney one of her kidneys was not attached well in the body, and it would move about, even though it was still hooked up to her system. And it would get infected, and she'd run horrendous fevers. And in 1922, last year, she nearly died. And Dr. Sawyer, her doctor, is not a surgeon. He's a homeopathic doctor, and he had tried all the homeopathic cures that he had at his disposal. So she went to Grant Hospital in Columbus for basically open kidney surgery, and realized that surgical art in 1922 is at its beginning, and a major surgery like that on an important organ would run a very high risk of simply being fatal. She would not live through the surgery, but it was also clear that she would not live without it. So the doctors from the Ohio State School of Medicine who were as knowledgeable as anybody could be at the time, operated, removed the kidney that was the problem. And after a long period of recovery, Florence returned to herself, her normal activities at the White House, and my confidant. I'm very grateful to the doctors for taking the risks for the kind of operation that might pull Florence through, and it did. But that whole episode consumed much of 1922 for the Harding family.
Now, President Harding, you've talked about being tired and not feeling the greatest. Have you had any medical issues throughout your life or recently?
Well, I think throughout my life I've been robust, healthy, active, energetic. I've felt good, and I think that's apparent in the way I've lived my life. I went fishing and camping with Henry Ford and Thomas Edison and the crew. We loved the outdoors and used every opportunity to enjoy the outdoors. As everybody knows, I love golf, and part of that is just simply being outdoors, being in the sunshine, being out in the fresh air, getting some exercise, and it's not necessarily about the game itself, because as everybody knows, my golf is modest at best. But recently, as in the last year, I haven't felt well at all. I mean, to be honest, nobody knows what the presidency involves. I went into the campaign, initially, to my closest friends, confided that I don't know if I have the strength or what it takes to do this job well. And everybody was patting me on the back, saying, "Oh, Warren, you're going to be just fine. Oh, Warren, you'd make a wonderful president." And I trusted them. And, all right, well, you probably know me better than I do. But once I got into the position, I found that my suspicions were true. Not that I was necessarily deficient in some way. It's just that the responsibilities of the presidency over the decades has grown to the point that no human being can adequately perform in the job, whether it's me or anybody yet born. The job is so difficult that it's almost undoable. And it's a matter of deciding what parts of the job will be left undone. There is more there than any human can possibly take on. Now, some of that, I'm accused of some of that being my own responsibility, because some have said that I'm simply not a good delegator. And if it lands on my desk, I try to take care of it. And that's probably true. Some of that's just out of a sense of responsibility. It's on my desk. I'm the president. I'm going to take care of it. But that mindset has gotten me into trouble over the last couple of years, because I've tried to answer all my own correspondence. In reality, I probably should have shuffled that off to a secretary. I've tried to let the mountains be mountains and let the molehills be molehills. By that I mean the things that are important, that are on my desk, I'm attending to, and the things that are molehills, I'll let be molehills. I've learned that. I think I've become better at that over the last couple years. I'm not perfect at it. But Overall, though, the demands of the presidency have ground me down. About 2 months ago, I was golfing at the Side of the Country Club in Columbus, where it's my favorite course. I am there frequently, and I couldn't do the 18 holes. I got up through about hole number 7, and then took the little shortcut over to hole 17, and then played it out into 18. I didn't have the energy to do an 18-hole round. That's unheard of for me.
Now, is there a doctor taking care of you?
Well, Dr. Sawyer is taking care of me.
And what's he saying at this point?
Well, he's saying, Warren, you know, you're tired. You're just tired. You're not sleeping well, and that's true. I'm not sleeping well. I have to prop myself up with several pillows. I have to sleep sitting nearly upright because if I lay down, I can't breathe at all. My lungs just fill up with fluid, and I'm just gasping for breath. But if I sit up, then I can breathe all right. But then it also means I don't sleep well. So I've not been sleeping well, coupled with the rigors of the presidency, and the worry that goes along with that. I'm a calm man. At least I appear so on the outside. I internalize everything. I give things too much thought. I let things bother me too much, and it's taking its toll on me. Dr. Sawyer finally demanded, Warren, you need a vacation. You have to get out of here. You just have to get out of here. And I took him at his word, and that's why we took the 1922 Voyage of Understanding and reinitiated it, put it on the schedule for 2023, with the understanding that would get me out of Washington in a controlled environment where I'm in a Pullman car. It's a little cocoon, basically. And that we could take a continental tour. We'd do an extensive tour make a trip through Canada, which is also the first time that a sitting president had been in Canada, on into Alaska, and it's the first time a sitting president had been into the Alaska Territory, and then go on down through California, on down the Pacific to the Panama Canal, through the Panama Canal, over to Puerto Rico, and then back to Washington. It would be a trip that would be 90 days expected. At this point, we're 22 days into it.
Now, would a trip of this nature be a good idea to somebody who can't finish a golf game? People would think travel like that is probably not the best idea.
Well, travel in 1922, if you're an executive or a high-ranking government official, was, when done well, a luxury experience. Presidential train, it's a 10-car train, it's a Union Pacific train, it's called the Super, and my Pullman car, which is the last car on the train, it's called the Superb, and for good reason. It's a superb environment. It's a luxury Pullman car with all the appointments, beautifully furnished, beautifully decorated, as many comforts as you can possibly fit into a custom-built train car. It's a luxury coach. equipped with all the modern amenities. It has telephones so that when the train stops, it can plug into the local telephone exchange and be in contact with the world. Same with telegraph. There's a telegraph on board that's plugged in when we stop at a telegraph station. So the communications is as good as it can be. The food is expertly prepared. There's a cuisine car with a fully equipped kitchen that feeds the entire crew. We're traveling with a party of 60 on this train. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of food for everybody. But Dr. Sawyer knew that in this environment, I would be treated well, very well. And I wouldn't have the intrusions that I would have if I stayed in Washington.
Now, as we come into San Francisco, what is going on?
Well, by the time I started taking ill, seriously ill. Up to the time I reached Seattle, I was tired, I was exhausted, and trying to find ways to sleep better. My heart rate would be 120 beats a minute, respiration about 40. That's not a good combination of numbers. My blood pressure was 170 or higher. My lips were swollen and blue. My feet were swollen. But by the time we hit Seattle, we had been eating a lot of shellfish. Being out on the Pacific coast, fisheries are abundant. Crab and shellfish are abundant, and I love both. I love seafood, and so we ate heartily of crab and shellfish. And I became seriously ill in Seattle when I had major intestinal upset, bad intestinal and stomach cramps. I was running a high fever, and the presumption was that I had food poisoning, specifically ptomaine poisoning, probably from crab or shellfish that had not been refrigerated properly. Odd, though, that nobody else in the party became ill. So that puts that philosophy, that theory, it makes it somewhat suspect. But nonetheless, I had all of the symptoms of food poisoning, coupled with the fatigue and bloating and other symptoms that I had been carrying for weeks before.
Now, you're traveling with doctors, as you said. Nobody else gets sick from the food that was eaten. Your lips are blue. Your feet are changing colors and swelling. You would think a doctor might look at this and say, there's a problem happening here.
Well, we have two doctors on the train. I had Dr. Boone, who is the attending White House physician, an MD, and then, of course, Dr. Carl Sawyer, who is Breeder General and the Surgeon General, who had a background in homeopathic medicine. The symptoms that I was exhibiting were, to be frank, probably beyond Dr. Sawyer's ability to deal with it. And understanding that they thought my heart was involved, but heart medicine in 1923 is not very advanced. the heart isn't something you would operate on. You'd never try to attempt such a thing. The only types of medicines that were available to deal with suspected heart issues were digitalis and caffeine. Lots of caffeine just to stimulate the body. Dr. Boone was suspecting some heart anomalies, but again, in 1923, there are limited resources to be able to treat such a thing.
As we come into San Francisco, why is this the stopping point? What is happening?
Well, we were originally planning to make a much more extensive tour. A trip was planned for San Francisco. But then we were due to be in San Francisco on July 31st, which we were. And then on August 1st, we were to depart for Los Angeles. August 2nd and 3rd, we were to depart for Santa Catalina Island. August 4th, we were to go on to San Diego. Los Angeles was canceled. Santa Catalina was canceled. San Diego was canceled. And then we were to continue the voyage on through the Panama Canal and on to Puerto Rico. That was canceled because it was clear that I couldn't sustain the rigors of travel beyond where I was, that San Francisco was as far as anybody felt they could safely take me. So we'd only planned to be in San Francisco for a day. Our party took over the eighth floor of the Palace Hotel, so we had the whole eighth floor to ourselves. And it was simply unknown as to whether we would be able to travel any further at that point. It was a question of how long would we need to stay in San Francisco for me to recuperate well enough to be able to continue the journey.
Now, we're here in San Francisco. Recuperation, what's going on? You're in a hotel, correct?
Yes. I'm in a...
Not a hospital.
No. In a hotel. In the... On the eighth floor, I'm surrounded by physicians, Dr. Sawyer and Dr. Boone, and they brought in specialists from the University of California. So I had attending five or six physicians that were with me on the floor. They weren't in my room all at once. Usually, one at a time, they would come in. It was just Florence and me and whichever doctor was coming in to assess the situation. But the doctors thought that a hospitalization wasn't necessary, that there wasn't any kind of treatment that would be done in a hospital that couldn't be done with adequate medical personnel in the hotel. And the Palace Hotel is a nice hotel. It's a nice accommodation.
Now, here we are, the afternoon of August the 2nd, 1923. And I appreciate you letting us into your room. I know you're not feeling well at all. But actually better than you have felt, is my understanding, in the last few weeks.
Well, true. When I was on the road, or on the water, in the case of some of our Pacific ventures, I spent days on a Navy transport ship called the USS Henderson. So when we were on the water, we were on the Henderson. And I wasn't doing well at all. When we arrived in San Francisco, one of the doctors... Well, I had instructed the entire medical team to keep my condition quiet. Let's not alarm anybody. Things were well under control. When I left Washington, I had put Harry Dougherty, Attorney General, and Andrew Mellon, Treasury Secretary, in charge of Washington operations to just handle it, because I need to focus on this trip. And so I had left Washington in capable hands. I wasn't worried about that. I had several members of the cabinet with me on the tour, and the people that came with me on the tour were people that needed to learn about Western United States, and especially needed to learn about Canada. I had with me on the train Speaker of the House Frederick Gillette, Secretary of Commerce Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Agriculture Wallace, Secretary of the Interior Hubert Work. I thought it was most important that he be there, as well as Dr. Sawyer, Surgeon General, and then attending party of assistants and members of the press and so forth. But I had instructed the medical team, everybody really, to keep my medical condition confidential. If anything would be released to the press, it would be a prepared statement, something that would be vetted and approved. But one of the doctors leaked to the press his own opinion that I had a 1 in 10 chance of survival.
Now, when did that happen?
Well, this was happening shortly after we were in Seattle. My health had declined severely. The food poisoning was taking its toll. In fact, I was just running a high fever, was running me down even further. And so one of the doctors leaked to the press a very gloomy outlook for my survival.
Does this make the national news?
Yes, it was picked up by some papers, but again, it was rumor from an unidentified anonymous source. Since it couldn't be attributed, it was just something that was clearly leaked. It was viewed as maybe dubious information, and it wasn't taken seriously by the mainstream media.
Do we know who leaked it?
No. No, we don't know who it was. It could have been any of maybe eight physicians. Many of them were from the San Francisco or Los Angeles area that I had no history with.
Now here on August the 2nd, not to delve too deep into your private life, but it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but that your father, who is still alive in Ohio, has actually been called to come to California because they are very fearful that you are going to leave, die. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct. My attending physicians, Dr. Sawyer and Dr. Boone, knew that my condition was serious. Maybe not to the extent of being grave, but serious. And to the extent that in those situations you call close family and make sure that they're nearby, partly because, well, anything can happen, but partly just for the comfort, to have family nearby when you're feeling ill.
Now, just to take that story one step further, and again, correct me if I'm wrong here, but this is the afternoon of August the 2nd. I believe he was planning to make the trip today, and you spoke to him on the phone this morning, right?
Yes.
What has happened?
Well, I told my father, and again, my father's a physician, a homeopathic physician, but he understands bodily functions and when things are looking difficult. So I told him how I was feeling and what my symptoms were, and got his physician's opinion about it. Of course, understanding that homeopathic physicians treat with small doses of specialized substances. They believe in purgatives, enemas to flush the system of toxins and those types of things. So that's what he was recommending to my physicians, but those were things that they were already doing anyway. But he just urged me to remain calm and trust my medical team, and that he would be with the family as soon as possible.
Now, it's my understanding that he is not going to make the trip now because you have said that you're starting to eat again as of this morning and feeling a bit better.
Right. That's correct. I really encouraged the medical team surrounding me because I had stopped vomiting and my fever was starting to reduce, and I was eating small quantities of comfort foods. They had been putting ice on my lips because they were swollen and blue, and the ice was helping. The swelling in my lips was reducing. They were doing the same with my feet to try to reduce the swelling. And of course, that also had the benefit of helping to reduce the fever from the suspected food poisoning. So doctors were saying that they were seeing me rally a bit, that they were seeing some strength returning. And interestingly enough, the doctor, I presume it was a doctor that leaked that I had one chance in 10 of surviving, went back to the press and said, well, I'd give him 9 out of 10 now.
On August 2nd.
On August 2nd.
Okay, now, obviously, it's August 2nd, 1923, so we'll do this in an interesting fashion. What would have been the last time we would be able to speak on August the 2nd?
Well, it would have been late in the afternoon on August 2nd. Any time up until about 7:20 in the evening, we would have been able to, you know, Florence was reading to me at the time. It was an article written about me by a journalist. It was an assessment of a calm man, which was a reasonably favorable view of my presidency, and I was listening with interest, and she paused for a moment, and I said, "Please go on," and that's the last I remember.
Up to that moment, what is August 2nd like?
Well, August 2nd is a flurry of medical activity. I don't say treatment because, you know, there aren't a lot of treatments for the kinds of symptoms that I was exhibiting, and everything that the doctors knew to do, they were doing. So I can't complain for lack of medical treatment. I can't claim that I didn't get the treatment that I deserved. I had the full attention of my own medical team, as well as experts in that area of California that were able to quickly make it to the Palace Hotel. And so I had a bevy of attending physicians that were at my beck and call and were practicing state-of-the-art 1923 medicine as best that they knew.
You mentioned Florence is reading to you tonight in the 7 o'clock hour. Now, that's California time, correct? Mm-hmm. So, 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. here on the East Coast. Who else is in the room?
It's Florence and Dr. Sawyer, and there may have been somebody from the California medical team, but I didn't know those men.
From what we might understand, are you ever taken to a hospital?
No.
No. Okay.
No. I was taken when we arrived. When we arrived in San Francisco, we were our entourage immediately left for the Palace Hotel, and there was no hospital or any other kind of treatment. People didn't the medical team didn't feel it was necessary.
On this day, do we really know that you are feeling better, or is this just wishful thinking? Seems like you're an optimistic guy.
Well, I am, but I can't be optimistic and wish that my fever was going down, or wish that some of my swelling was going down, or wish that a little more healthy color was coming into my face. Those are things that were actually happening.
Are you bedridden this day?
Yes. Yes. I'm able to get out of bed with substantial assistance. But in essence, I'm bedridden today.
At what point did that happen?
That happened when we arrived in San Francisco. When I was getting off of our transportation and was headed toward the hotel, I needed substantial help to get off of the train, to get into a car, to get out of a car, to get into the lobby of the hotel. I needed people around me to provide me some support. I could walk, but I needed help.
Do we know if your paper, the Marion Star, is reporting on any of this? Did they run the story on the 1 in 10 chance?
That I don't know. And I say I don't know because I had sold the newspaper. When I was starting to have difficulty sleeping, difficulty breathing at night, I noticed a decrease in my activity level and my strength. I was concerned about what might happen, which is why I rewrote and finalized my will before we left on the trip, which is why I sold the newspaper, sold it to Brush More Newspapers. As a little side note here, I think everybody knows my partner and I bought the paper at a sheriff's auction for $300. I sold the paper, the business enterprise, to Brush More Newspapers for $550,000. That's not a bad return on $300.
And that's a rich man in 1923.
In 1923, yes. I wasn't from a family of means. Florence was, but I wasn't from a family of means. And that was, when I was a boy, my father gave me a field, a 13-acre field, for me to farm myself. It was his land, but he let me farm the 13 acres as if it was my own. I planted wheat, and when we harvested it, the grain I sold at the grain elevator for $13, and with $13 in my pocket, I felt like I was the richest man on earth. I have never felt richer than when I had $13 in my pocket from a 13-acre field of wheat that I had grown myself.
On this trip, certainly your health has become a big issue. Do you feel any missteps have been taken?
No, I think everybody has done what can be done under the circumstances, recognizing that rest and pampering were probably the best treatments, given that I was so worn down. And I've had difficulties with that my whole life. When I was a state senator, I let the pressures of the job get to me, and I had to take several weeks off and go up to Dr. Kellogg's sanitarium in Battle Creek just for rest, relaxation, and pampering and recharging. That was a common thing to do among business executives and higher-level politicians and so forth, that when the pressures of their careers were getting to them, it was a safe place to go and eat healthy and get some proper exercise and some medical treatment if necessary and just recharge. And I had, throughout my political career, made several trips to the Kellogg Sanitarium for just that purpose, which is why now when I was feeling so exhausted that this voyage of understanding that would take me out of Washington for maybe as much as 90 days would be rejuvenating. I was clearly looking forward to it. And it wasn't all vacation. That's also some of my fault. I went into this voyage of understanding with this idea. What I wanted to do was exchange ideas with the American people. And there's no better way to do that than to meet them in person and go from place to place and meet the people where they are. I wanted the people to tell me if the policies of my administration were helping them find a way forward from the things that they were facing, from inflation, from high unemployment, traumatic issues going on in the farming industry, low commodity prices, farmers were going broke, we were in the middle of a recession that was stemming from the end of the Great War. So I wanted to know if the policies that my administration was putting in place were addressing those things. And just as important, I wanted to explain to people all along the way what the administration was trying to do for the people. And if in the days that we were on the road and the people I could meet, the crowds that I could address, that if we could get mutual understanding, that would help the nation heal and help the nation move forward. So this wasn't a multi-week vacation for Warren and Florence. The trip involved 5,246 miles, some of it by rail, some of it by auto, some of it by steamship. And beyond that, the trip was to continue and go on down through the Panama Canal and so forth. So that was the purpose of it. And in 22 days, I made 85 speeches. That's roughly four a day.
Where was your last speech?
My last speech was in Seattle. And in fact, I have that with me. If
we're going to get to that,
you want to go through that at some point. But yes, I have the last speech I was able to make was in Seattle at the University of Washington Stadium.
And what was the date of that?
That was let me look. Seattle. Where were I'm looking at my itinerary? Where were we in Seattle? Because the dates all kind of flow together when you go from one to the other to the other to the other. July 27th. Yes, it was July 27th.
So just 6 days ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly enough, how did that speech go?
Well, it went well. It was a strenuous speech because I was addressing a crowd of 25,000 people, the University of Washington Stadium, the Husky Stadium, was filled to capacity. Interestingly, many of them were a significant number of them were Boy Scouts, because there was a Boy Scout Jamboree going on in Seattle that week, and so all the Boy Scouts at the Jamboree, understanding that these are Boy Scouts from all over the country, every state in the Union, that come to the Jamboree as an annual pilgrimage, and so they were all at the at the stadium, as well as dignitaries and just people off the street from the Seattle area.
We're going to come back next hour, and we're going to get President Harding's last speech that he gave after the break. But before we do that, on August 2nd, 1923, today, if it should be your last day, has it been a good life?
Well, yes, it has. It's been it's been a wonderful life. I'm blessed to have a loving and attentive spouse, Florence, who's been my companion, my confidant, my business partner, my advisor. I've been fortunate to have received an adequate education for me to be able to do my work. I have the satisfaction of taking a floundering pamphlet of a paper and turning it into a viable business enterprise with Florence's help, of being able to use that paper as a pulpit from which to speak to the community about my opinions and political views. That gave me the voice to reach an audience that ultimately led to my political career. It started somewhat modestly, but my political career would not have been possible had it not been for my position as editor of the Star. And I'm grateful for the support of all the voters who voted me into office as a state senator, as a United States senator, and ultimately as president. I've had a tremendous amount of support from people who believed in me, and I've had, through the office of the president, the opportunity to, I think, make a difference with initiatives of the administration that I hope will be lasting, improvements in radio communications, improvements in aviation, in the transportation industry, of being able to balance the federal budget for the first time in decades. We're finally putting an end to the Great War by insisting on the signing of the peace armistice, and other accomplishments would include being honored to dedicate the Lincoln Memorial, being honored to dedicate the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. I mean, those are once in a lifetime experiences. That I'm very grateful for, and so yes, on balance, it's been a great life.
We're going to go to break here. August 2nd, 2023, the 100-year centennial of the death of President Warren G. Harding. We're coming back after the break with President Harding's last speech.
768154. That number again, 740-396. 8154.
Adam the Computer Guy is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio, providing on-site and remote